I had people coming up to me when I was a kid saying, hey, your dad's amazing. Like, nobody does this kind of thing. You know, that's people incredible. Are not legally obligated. They're not going to go back and pay me hundreds of thousands of dollars when they don't have a legal obligation to do it. But dad did it. And so that was like, you know, to me, that was the kind of guy he was like throughout my whole life. I mean, he was just one of those, like when I was born, I drew a great card, man. My dad was like, taught me that, hey, when you do say you're going to do something, you know, you got to do it.
All right, welcome to another episode of Company on the Rise. This is the part two of our conversation with Tyler Bennett about Gar Bennett and how he deals with pressure. If you missed the first part, make sure that you go back and listen to that one and subscribe for all future episodes. Also, check us out on companyontherise.com and our YouTube channel for bonus content. All right, get ready. Here we go for part two of Tyler Bennett and Gar Bennett and how to deal with pressure.
Let's go.
Hard time dealing with it. If nobody's ever gone through that and they're trying to coach you up, it's not really the right coach. You know, it's usually got to be somebody that's got that experience.
I think the other thing that came out of the peer groups that I personally didn't expect going when I got into them is the friendships. I didn't expect. I mean, I think the people in these groups, they become lifelong friends. I mean, they. Yeah. You go through a lot with these guys over the course of the year, and sometimes I see Tyler and these guys more than I see my friends, and so you end up in this place where we all would do a lot for each other, and that's fun.
Yeah, no doubt, and I think friendships are always. Are typically formed when you're going through some type of adversity together, right? And, you know, in high school, I was on a soccer team. Well, I'm still friends with some of those guys now because when we lost, it brought us closer together, right? The wins were the wins, and yeah, we were, you know, everybody's happy. But when you lose, I think losing teaches you more than winning. And certainly in that context, it's that way. And so on the peer group, yeah, everybody's got some major problems that they're dealing with. And they're having a hard time with, and sometimes it's an employee matter or customer matter, and it's all shared confidentially, but you know, there's some serious stuff that goes on. And when you're going through it together and people are trying to help you out, you know, you start to feel like, hey, these people actually care about my business. They care about me. Part of the goal of the group is to help others, you know, make the right decisions and not make a bad decision. And so when you get that kind of support and when you come out of that problem, there's a lot of, you know, you're very grateful to those people sitting around the table that they helped you through that. And that really creates a strong bond. They were there for you during that adversity time. And I think that's why, you know, in life, a lot of times the people that you go through those kinds of things with end up being lifelong friends because you've gone through some crap. It's like, you know, when you fight in Afghanistan, those military guys, those guys are all still friends. And it's because they went through the same thing and it was really tough. And, you know, so those types of situations, I really believe are that you grow as a person, but I think you also really grow your friendships with others too. And the peer group's been amazing for me in that respect.
So Tyler, when things get a little overwhelming and you feel like your back's against the wall, is there anything that you do personally? I know that with the peer groups and everything, that's a lot of support, but is there anything that you do personally to kind of motivate yourself to go forward?
So a lot of it is trying to clear your head and having that making time, forcing yourself to take time to clear your head in some way. Whether that's through exercise, a weekend off at the beach. And what I do is I play guitar. I play in a band. We're not very good, but we don't care because we're not in it to be Britney Spears. I mean, I know I look like Britney Spears, you know, but we're not in it to do anything but sort of decompress and have a good time. And so that is for me, and the other guys, you know, I have one guy who's the principal at a school and he has a lot of stressful stuff. And so he plays bass and he comes in and that's his release. I have another guy who is a farmer, and he used to have a dairy. He had to close that down and change his farming practice. He went through a lot, you know, went through a divorce and that kind of stuff. And so that was his release as well, is just to be able to hang out with a couple guys. We make a lot of noise and we have a lot of fun, and it's a complete distraction from our normal activities. And so that really helps, you know, and for each person, it's something different. You have to have that one thing or create space somehow, some way. Right. Otherwise you'll just, you know, you can spend with technology, you can spend 24 hours a day working right now.
Yeah.
And you can get to a point where you never have a rest. Just not good to do that. You gotta find a way to clear your head.
Well, it seems like over the past 50 years, it's gone from a physical requirement of work every day to more of a mental requirement where, mm-hmm. you know, you don't have to go out and work the fields, but you might have to deal with the systems that handle all of that along with instant messaging and emails and all of that. So, and it can't get very overwhelming sometimes.
No, you're right. I mean, I think it's much harder to turn it off mentally. And I think, you know, you can, you got to really be disciplined to turn it off. Yeah. And it's hard. I always admired people that I worked with before joining family business in a previous work life. I worked for a Fortune 500 company and I had a boss, I had two bosses, and they could turn it off. You know, they would have the craziest days and they would get home and they would turn it off completely. Wow. And I'm like, I could never do that. And I was so jealous. Like, how do you do that? You know, I'm just not wired that way where I can just turn a switch and all of a sudden I'm in family mode at the house, you know? I wished I could, but it was really, really hard. And I think some people are hardwired that way and other people are hardwired to continue to create, innovate, think about what the business is doing. And so, but I was always jealous that those guys could just go home and turn things right off.
Yeah, I could never do that. I cannot do that either. Matter of fact, when Becky joined, we had this conversation the other day. When Becky joined the company, I said, I just want to warn you, my mind never stops. So you will get text and phone calls at all hours of the evening.
Yep. It's true. It's true. And I'm the exact opposite of Chris. So
that doesn't mean you guys have to answer them, but he will send.
Yeah.
Yeah. I used to, you know, I've gotten better, I must say. I turned 50 this year, so I've gotten better. But
I do think it is something you have to practice and work on and, like, mentally make yourself do.
I think it's a balance. I think what makes people entrepreneurs and startup people are the fact that they always have ideas and they always are thinking about how to improve things. And I mean, how many businesses have I talked about man, nobody's doing it this way and it should be done this way. We should start a business.
Are you talking this week or like?
I did one this week. We should start a business that does this.
I think you had three this week.
Yeah. No, Chris is notorious for that. There's no doubt.
You're the same way. I remember an Excel sheet you came with. There were about seven or eight different businesses on it.
Yeah. So I definitely went through a period of crazy where I was like, hey, I can see we can, that's a good financial opportunity over there. Let's do that. And it was too much at the same time. But, anyway, there's a couple successes and a string of failures in there, but, it is something where some people are, you know, are hardwired to be in that entrepreneurial zone. And that's kind of just where I'm happy. You know, I'm happy doing those, trying to grow through those things. And I've kind of recently, you know, I've kind of been okay with coming up with an idea or thinking about something for a new business and just letting it go. You know, before when I was younger, it was like, I can't let that go. I've got to do that, you know. And now I'm like, okay, maybe scaling down and staying within, you know, Bennett Environmental is okay. I don't need to have a third and a fourth and a fifth thing going on, you know. So, but if you look at a guy like Elon Musk, right? He's got SpaceX, he's got Tesla, and now he wants Twitter. Why the heck would you want Twitter when you've got SpaceX and Tesla? I mean, I don't quite understand that. But it's just bizarre that he would even go there, right, to me. Like, why would you even – you already have two. How can you be CEOs of two, right? I mean, you know, a company that size, you're the CEO or you're not. Now he's going to add another one, and I just –
Well, he's got the boring company, too, that makes the underground the tunnels.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. He's got the tunnels.
And the solar – And the solar side.
Yeah.
When you said boring, I thought you meant it was like boring.
No, that's the name of it, the boring company. That's just because they dig tunnels underground.
I think that's part of the innateness of entrepreneurs, though. I think part of the innateness is you always see things and you always think, whether it's true or not, sometimes not, but you always think that you could do it better. And so that's the, I think that's the innateness that people of entrepreneurship characteristics have.
How much do you think personal pride pushes you to clear these goals and to succeed and go further?
So that's, I do want to touch on that, because we've talked about that before with me is when I've talked about this on a previous episode of the podcast, but when I, one of the reasons I'm doing what I'm doing, I never really thought I was a startup person, but I, much like Tyler, I came up and in my dad's company, and I am doing this to prove to myself that I can do it. And that it ended up being owned by private equity, and my dad retired before I was running it. So it wasn't like he promoted me to there, but do I think I would have had that position without it being my dad's company originally? Not a chance. And so I, part of my drive is wanting to do this because I want to prove to myself more than anything that I can do it and I can be successful without anybody's help.
Right.
And that's, I was wondering with you, what, you know, do you have anything like that really drives you? I mean,
you know, what's interesting. I'm not, my biggest thing is I don't want to disappoint anyone else. I'm not so much concerned about disappointing myself. I'm pretty comfortable in my own skin about, like, you know, am I a fun person to hang out with, or am I a good guy? Can I, you know, all those things. I'm okay with who Tyler Bennett is, but my biggest fear is that I'm going to disappoint my customers, my friends, my investors, my family. Those are the things that drive me, is like, I just don't want to disappoint anybody. Cause when you're a startup and you say, hey, look, I'm going to come out with this great thing, and you go and you convince your customers, hey, this great thing is going to work amazing for you. Right. Well, now it has to work amazing for them, nice. You know? And so I'm so afraid that it's only going to be half as amazing as I said it was, or it's going to be, or it's not going
to
work.
You know, but I think it does come back to being comfortable in your own skin, though. You're comfortable with Tyler Bennett because you believe you do what you say that you do. And so the fact that you told these people that, you feel like, I mean, that's part of being comfortable in your own skin, is you feel like as being Tyler Bennett, you do what you say. And you told these people that you were going to do this. And
your word is your bond.
And your word is, it means a lot to you.
Yeah. No, for sure it does. I mean, you know, my dad was an amazing example for that, doing what you say you were going to do. And I give you an example. You know, in the 1980s, our family business actually filed Chapter 11 bankruptcy.
I did not know that.
Yes, we filed Chapter 11. We had acquired a drip irrigation company in the early 80s because my dad said, hey, that's the future. You know, we're using too much water out here. Everybody's flood irrigating. We've been doing flood irrigation stuff for years, and the future is going to be drip irrigation. So I want in. So he borrowed money from the bank, acquired a business. Literally the next year or 2 years later, the commodity prices for wine grapes, which is what the predominant drip irrigation was used for at the time, it just, the market fell out, and he had all that bank debt, and he's like, I can't pay it. So he had to file Chapter 11. So he worked, but he worked his way out of it. And it took him about 3 or 4 years to get back to, you know, to a good spot. But after that time, he went back to every vendor that he owed in bankruptcy and paid them back plus 10%, even though he had no legal obligation to do it. And I had people, it's amazing, right? Right was right, and you know, despite what the law said, you know, this was the way in his mind. And so I had people coming up to me when I was a kid saying, "Hey, your dad's amazing. Like nobody does this kind of thing. You know, people are not legally obligated. They're not going to go back and pay me hundreds of thousands of dollars when they don't have a legal obligation to do it." But dad did it. And so that was like, you know, to me, that was the kind of guy he was like throughout my whole life. I mean, he was just one of those, like when I was born, I drew a gray card, man. My dad was like, taught me that, hey, when you do say you're going to do something, you know, you got to do it. And that was instilled in me like daily in my youth. And so I'm still molded that way, right? Like I still have that biggest concern, which was my dad's biggest concern as I watched him go through his business life, was that he was not going to be able to live up to what he said he was going to do. Right. And it wasn't because he wanted to check his 401k balance and make sure that it was high enough. Like he didn't worry about that kind of stuff. He should have probably, cause he didn't retire with enough cash, but, you know, really that wasn't what drove him. What drove him was being able to do what he said he was going to do and help people out. It was really cool.
By the way, I just want to touch on that for a second, because in my opinion, the single, if you could pick one thing that makes America great, this is going to sound weird, it's bankruptcy. Mm-hmm. The ability to file bankruptcy is the number one thing that makes this country what it is. And really? Because you are able to go out and take a risk, and if it fails, it's not the end of the world. It's not that bad. You can recover and you can try again. And mm-hmm. and that is the one unique thing that is really different about the United States of America than most of the world. And it's the best thing in this country. It's one of the reasons, but I think it's the reason that we're the entrepreneur economic engine of the world.
That's an interesting viewpoint. You know, you think about it, a lot of places have debtor's prison.
Right.
Yeah. You know, and it's entirely possible that my dad, if we were in another country, could have gone to debtor's prison and I would have never seen him for the rest of my life, you know? But he was able to rebuild, and he was, sorry, I got a train going by here, but we're able to come out of it. And now we just had the best year we've ever had at Gar Bennett in the Bennett side, in 94 years last year. So, you know, it's really cool. So, but yeah, that's what kind of motivates me really, is just, there is some, you know, I'm not going to lie. There is some self, like, hey, can I actually do this? You know, some thought process. Can I actually build something that wasn't there before, you know, I was born? And I think we're going to do that. But the reality is that it's very different than, you know, the large company. It's just been completely different set of rules.
So one of the things, my favorite business book that we've talked about before is The Hard Things About Hard Things. Have you read that?
Yeah.
And my takeaway of that book is, because he almost lost the business three or four times through the journey, is there's always a way out. You just have to find it. And, mm-hmm. and I mean, he went through stuff that you would have thought the company was dead, and he created this way out and through desperation, really. And so, and I know you talked about when Pam came and visited you for a week and things like that, and I know those are some of the conversations, maybe not in that context, but those are kind of, you know, can I start over, is there a way out, and finding that way out is really one of the characteristics that entrepreneurs and startups have to have, because there are, you go through these periods where it looks dim, and you have to say, there is always a way out. No is not the answer. What can I do?
Yeah, it is. You have to fight and scrap. And for some people, it can be very uncomfortable, and some people it can be fun. But yeah, you do have to fight and you do have to scrap. And we have gotten better because our backs have been against the wall. There's no doubt about that. And sometimes when you've got really what looks like to be no hope, there's, like you said, there's hope, there's a way. And we've thought about things that we would never even have thought about if we hadn't have been in a situation where we're so uncomfortable and we're so deflated that, you know, we've got to just think way outside of the box or the, or what's within our vision and get back to, you know, how can we get out of this? There's a way. Let's find it. Let's identify it. And then let's try it. I don't know one startup that said, hey, this was my business plan today. I'm going to start the business and the business plan never changes. And 25 years down the road, they're very successful. I don't know one startup that has ever achieved that. It's always been pivot after pivot after pivot. And then hopefully when you find your sweet spot, now you can scale big time.
Yeah, we've talked about that before, about how failures can lead to success.
Well, and I think it goes back to my view on I have a different view than most people on marketing, but the only marketing that matters as far as research, marketing research is what I'm talking about, not marketing to sell, but marketing research to find out if you're going to do something, is you can do as much marketing research as you want, but the reason that you have to pivot as an entrepreneur is because the marketing research really at the end of the day doesn't tell you a whole lot, because the only thing that matters is the people that pull out their wallets and take out money and give you cash for something that you did or sold to them or made. And so that's the market. That's the truly the only market research that matters. And so you can have this idea and do as much market research as you want to start a business. The reason you have to pivot is because what you thought wasn't right, because you could interview 100 people, 1,000 people, 1,000,000 people, and the answers they gave you weren't the real answers because they didn't have to pull money out of their wallet to tell you what the real answer was.
Well, that's right, too. And if you're chartering new territory, it's like, how are you going to find perfect market research? I mean, you're not. You're chartering new territory. You got a new widget or something you think that it's going to work better than what's out there. You think people are going to want to pay for it at the price point that you've established. You know, you think all these things, but until you do it, you don't know. And and when you're starting something new, there is no perfect market research. You know,
and that's why, like on the product development side, on our side, you have to decide what's good enough and then get it to market. You can't wait. You got to get to 80% and it's good enough. Get it to market, because the other 20% are going to evolve based on what the people tell you that pull cash out of their pocket.
Yep. No, you're exactly right. I think there's a lesson there, and but you'll battle engineers and product people because they want to make it 100%. So that's a challenge with a lot of different places. Is you have to go with 80% and get going, because you can take too much time on a lot of things, and it's not good.
We did that with the renderings that we were doing, because I know when we first started and talked about it, I was like, you know, we can do this. I don't know how yet, but we can do it. And then took the weekend, tried to figure some things out. At first, we were going to build the whole city block and then, or city square and like a 2 mile square of the city and all of that, so that we could put the, and then we just realized that, you know, what we need is something that shows just this specific location with our lights in it that looks real. And there were even times where he was like, don't worry about the lamp post, like make it look better. And I'm like, okay. And because you can get stuck in that, in the details, and that can drag you down.
It can. It's a fight. And, but yeah, no, it's a big problem, I think, out there. I think you've got to get to a point where, the market has to drive, the customer drives what you're doing, not the engineering. I mean, you can easily build something that nobody wants. It's too expensive. I've done that. And, my suggestion to anybody would be get as much market information as you can. But like Chris said, get to market, you know, get it out there, because you're going to learn a lot when it's out there. And you can improve it later. You can always come out with 2.0. Version 1.0 just needs to get out there. Yep. And then everyone can tell you what version 2.0 needs to look like.
All right. Exactly.
Very good, man. I really appreciate the time, and it's great to see you.
Hey, it's always great to talk to you, Chris. And nice to meet this team. This is the dream team right here.
It's good to meet you.
It's part of it.
Yeah.
Oh, I was going to say, by the way, my opinion and $5 will get you a cup of coffee at Starbucks. It's not worth a whole lot, but you did get the honest answers today.
All right. We appreciate it, man.
Yeah, definitely.
Hey, great. Thanks again.
Stick around. Great. I want to talk to you a little bit more after this.
Yeah, sure. We'll do.
All right, great. Well, thanks, Tyler, for joining us, and good luck with all your future endeavors. Keep pushing through that, and also for anybody listening or watching, make sure you subscribe for new episodes and check out YouTube for bonus content. We'll have more information on there as well, and you can always visit our website, companyontherise.com.
Thanks, Jess.
Thanks, guys.
Look at the dream team right there. We are building something. What does it say behind you? We are building something kick-ass here. I like that.
Yep. You need one of those.
I do need one of those. I do need one of those, man.
Hey, this is Chris with Company on the Rise podcast. Make sure to subscribe to hear more.